The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Acute and Chronic Neuropathies is presented by Dr. Scott Spradlin.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, you have me four times today, so I promise you, I always say I'm one of the luckiest people here because my last talk ends with you eating lunch while I'm talking, so it always does well. Taking the boards three times, as Kevin says, you know, a lot of this has been a lot of thought throughout the whole process. Can't do neurology in a day, much less in four lectures. We'll go hit on some important things that hopefully help you through the preparation for the boards, either whether it's the first time or it's a repeat. As I was walking through the hotel last night, I saw a lot of people taking a lot of time doing a lot of investment, and I saw a lot of them walk away with not a whole lot of return. But I'll tell you, you're a good example for everyone that's out there on those one-arm bandits, because I know sometimes you question, but spending this time coming to the courses and doing the reading really does pay off for you. And so thank you for doing that. So first we're going to talk a little bit about acute and chronic neuropathies. And really, for the disclaimer, I have no financial interest for any of the talks today. So first, when we start talking about the neuropathies, is we've got to start in the base, and then we're going to work our way through a series of discussions today. But we're looking at three things that are really happening. We either have a mononeuropathy, where a nerve is being impinged or acted on in one spot. We have mononeuropathy multiplexes, where we have one nerve getting an assailant either from a disease or from some kind of compression in multiple points. And then we have polyneuropathies, which are ones that, of course, involve multiple nerves, multiple points with impingement. And as you can only imagine, board questions are best for polyneuropathies than they are mononeuropathies. So the whole reason we're here is about a test. So the way I gauge all of this is preparing you to answer a question as it is proposed to you. So classic board questions are, you know, when I first started in this, we started back when we started the first course, board review course. When I took my first board exam, you need three hands. You needed one to hold into the book, and you needed at least four or five extra digits for the book that had the pictures in it, so they referred to like four or five of them, so you kind of kept your finger in there. That's a big change today from when I took my last one last year. So we got a 72-year-old man who presents to your outpatient clinic with a complaint of recurrent spells of hand numbness. Excuse me. On exam, he has weakness of his fingers spreading. He also has sensory loss in the last two digits, splitting the ring finger. The most likely etiology for his symptoms is. So, A, TIA, C6 radiculopathy, C7 radiculopathy, or an ulnar neuropathy. So the important part about this question, and the good thing about a board exam question that you could get, is go give you all the information to specifically focus in on something. So you've got a person who has numbness, has some weakness, and it's affecting the last two fingers on splitting the ring finger, which goes along with a nerve pattern. So what do you think the answer is? It's an ulnar neuropathy. So that's a pretty straightforward question. Got the information. As we go through the rest of this lecture, it's going to be very, very important that when you hear, there's key words that you need to pick out of a question that drives you. And we'll be talking about some of those. So first, when we're looking at a neuropathy workup, the clinical workup needs family history, personal history. Really a focus there is on activities or trauma or any type of family disease where people had nerve issues. Then you need to think about the metabolic components. And you've heard this throughout all the other lectures so far this week. Diabetes, glucose out of control is certainly something that drives a component of a neuropathy. Inflammation with the sedimentation rate, or CRP. Creatinine from your renals. Thyroxine from any type of thyroid. Anemias can give us neuropathies. Pertinent radiographic films. Pertinent radiographic films are going to be those there you could have a neuropathy associated with an age-related malignancy. And of course, we all know as we get over 50, they have higher and higher risks of potential malignancies, and cancer, of course, is one that can cause neuropathies. And then an EMG or a nerve conduction test. So let's look at the focal compressive radiculopathies. As we mentioned earlier, it's a local peripheral nerve. It's usually from compression. We have to differentiate it by multiplex, and that means making sure just one spot is being pressed on instead of multiple. And examples of that's going to be your radial neuropathy, your carpal tunnel, your ulnar neuropathy we just saw an example of, the sciatic nerve, the peroneal nerve compression, and brachial neuritis. So for example, in a board exam, if they were looking for you to go for a peroneal nerve compression, you're going to be talking about a little bit of foot drop, an inability to do an inversion or an eversion of the foot. And so if you have weakness and pain down that, that's got to be some of the symptoms that drive that, which goes right along with the dermatome pattern. So let's go into mononeuropathy multiplex. Diabetic neuropathy is the most common mononeuropathy multiplex. You can have alcoholic neuropathy. Bell's palsy can be a multiplex. And of course, multiple sclerosis is one that we'll spend some time on this afternoon. It's also a multiplex. The polyneuropathies. Polyneuropathies aren't seen that frequently in practice, but they're seen quite frequently on board. Guillain-Barré is the most common autoimmune polyneuropathy. Most common autoimmune polyneuropathy. Diabetic peripheral neuropathy is the most common overall. Makes sense. Hereditary motor and sensory neuropathy, or Marie Charcot tooth, as a polyneuropathy. And then there's the chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, or the SIDS. The reason that one is loved so well by the boards is that the SIDS and the Guillain-Barré are very similar. However, steroids make the SIDS better, and it does not with the Guillain-Barré. Others, of course, are going to be HIV. You can have heavy metal poisonings. You can have nutritional deficiencies. It only makes sense. Paraneoplastic, as we talked about. And then, as you know, from the rheumatology lectures, those type of polyneuropathies that come from some of those diseases. So let's talk about some of the ones that are more frequently discussed on boards. One is hereditary motor sensory neuropathy, better known as Marie Charcot tooth. It's the most common inherited polyneuropathy, most common inherited, so now you've heard the most common overall, the most common autoimmune, and the most inherited. Three things, remember. Two main types are type 1 and type 2. It's autosomal recessive or autosomal dominant. It's a slow onset, gradual onset over years. So if this is a test question, it's going to be someone that has 5 to 10 or 15 years of progression, not 5 or 6 days. Associated foot drop and weakness. So you're going to see that type of peroneal nerve involvement. And sensory loss in a stocking distribution. Guillain-Barré, most common inflammatory polyneuropathy. It has ascending paralysis, weakness in the limbs. So if you get a test question, that's going to be the the ascension of that paralysis, areflexia. It's going to have to be something to be in that question. Usually, and normally for a board exam, and even in real life, there is usually an associated insult. And it usually, you know, from the standpoint, it can be certain type of viruses. It can certainly be a bacterial infection, Campylobacter. Swine flu was big a few years ago. Haven't seen much of that hit in here, but usually a preceding illness. Abdominal pain, gastrointestinal virus is one. The CSF shows an elevated protein and a slight increase in cell count. And the treatment for that is going to be plasmapheresis, IVIG, and steroids are of no use. So let's look at a case. Most board questions are short, with not a whole lot of information in them, of detail. This one's a little tougher, but I want us to go through the thinking process on this. So we've got a 52-year-old man who presents with 2 years of progressive burning, tingling. To a lesser extent, he has tingling in his fingertips. Shoes, socks, and even the light touch in the beds are very irritating. When walking, the pain becomes more severe. And the examination shows a stocking and glove distribution that's symmetric. His muscle strength is normal. And his stretch reflexes are absent at the ankles. So let's look at this question. We got a couple years worth of symptoms. We have tingling, hyperesthesias. You're already kind of thinking diabetes, right, in your mind. The next thing is that of the stocking glove distribution, the interesting thing is muscle strength is normal. So immediately if they give you that and you see the muscle strength is normal, it means that probably there's no muscle atrophy, which goes against all the diseases that could cause that. And then we've got reflexes that are absent versus present. So we know we have a neurological. And then, of course, we have a picture. And, you know, I sat back there the other day, and pictures mean a whole lot when you get them on a board exam. If you look at a picture on a board exam, you didn't get anything out of it, go back and look at the picture. It's one of the most important commandments that I want you to walk out of here with. So you look at this and you have to study this picture. What we see from this picture is we've got some atrophy. We've also got some chronic changes anteriorly on the dorsum. And we don't see any ulcers. We don't see any skin lesions of melanotic nature. Nothing that would drive us that. So what process do we kind of go through? So what we have right now described to us from that question is a chronic progressive sensory neuropathy. That's the way I want you to kind of think about this. So much like when we started reading a question, being good interns, we thought about diabetes. And because it appears to be symmetrical, and also the picture showed it to be symmetrical, it makes us think it's more metabolic. Because if it's unilateral, then it's probably going away from metabolic, more of a systemic. So diabetes, HIV, sarcoid, myeloma, porphyria, something, either alcohol-related, nutritional, along the lines of what we outline. So, once again, as we talked about earlier, we want to look for the glucose, we want to see the saturation rate, CBC, thyroid, any other pertinent tests that could possibly drive you that way based on what you get from the history. So let's talk a little bit about the treatment of neuropathic pain. I think the course today will be talking about specific treatment for specific disease, but it's not unreasonable for them to present to you one of the neuropathies we just talked about, specifically the multiplexes or the focal neuropathies, and say, what will be your next step? Are they driving for there? They want to make sure that you are not with narcotics or pain pills, but you're treating it with medications that are appropriate. So as a quick rule of thumb there, I kind of condensed it down. If you either try general neuralgia, which is stabbing face pain, carbamazepine would be your choice for that. It wouldn't be unreasonable for gabapentin or the lamictals, etc. But if you see a choice, I would not do a mixture if you want that. It may give you a concern or a question. Next, if you see something that's sharp, stabbing, beasting like, the one that's dragging you down the diabetes route, you really want to be pregabalin or gabapentin. And you can use some of the for burning, you know, which really diabetes is most common. Not tolerate, then you would want to be going down the route of SSRI or prazosin. Opioid analgesics are important in control of the pain, but not at the input of initial treatment. So it could be part of the stim, but don't give it to the driver. Case two, 24-year-old, 5 days, progressive burning, tingling in the feet, creeping into the hand symmetrically. Remember, we got a couple days symmetrical. On the day of admission, he was difficult walking because of his development of bilateral foreleg weakness and foot drop. A few days before the onset of the sensory symptoms, he had severe GI virus. He does have a stocking and glove distribution sensory loss. So here we got one. The reason I have this one in here, because you saw the GI loss. The GI insult, have a couple days. So all at once, you're saying, I've got some weakness. Here it is. Where's Guillain-Barré in the answer? The answer is that it's not Guillain-Barré. Because they gave us a picture. And this year, because I had so much challenges with this little pointer, I made my own little pointers on that. So you can see on me, I found it easier for me. As you can see on that hand, there's these little white lines that I have the arrow pointed to across that finger bit. So you stare at the hand. That is a mean line. Dr. Darrow will talk about a whole bunch of line pictures here in a little while. He does an outstanding job of it. But this is a mean line. And that gives you the answer of what's really going on here. So this is heavy metal poisoning. And lines are associated usually with arsenic. So just find one or two things in the question and start to answer because they use a number here as well. Right. Got a gentleman here who's 29 years old who woke up with intense aching pain in his right jaw. He had sagging on the right side of his face, and the examination showed smiling eyebrows with that deficit, but otherwise a normal exam. His sensation mildly increased, and the examination of his ears normal. What does he have? A stroke? Possible. But when we saw the rest of the exam normal, most likely not. So what is the diagnosis? What is the workup? This is Bell's palsy. It is diagnosed by physical exam only. Does not need imaging because of the physical and what you have. You do based on the results. You don't have a neurological test anywhere else, so you don't need any further scanning. And if there was a particular lesion found in that area, it would have been what? Ramsey Hunt. Next is a 25-year-old, 3 days of gradual progressive difficulty walking. He has weakness of his arms, his heaviness in his legs. And on exam, you find information that agrees with what he's complaining of. He's got weakness in the proximal and distal muscle groups. He's got a decrease in position, vibration, in his toes. His muscles, reflexes are absent in the arms and the legs. He describes a mild respiratory illness 3 days before the onset of the weakness. What is it? It's Guillain-Barré. Next one. 40-year-old, 15 years of progressive difficulty. Recent difficulty with hand function. Symptoms are symmetric. So now we got years, symmetry. He's got muscle atrophy, which goes along with the environmental process. Also has a picture to the right that shows the pes cavus. Charcot-Marie-Tooth, hereditary motor sensory anomaly. This case is a 51-year-old with 3 weeks of continuous pain, comfort. He has other history. Examination is super sensitive in the area we have circled in the picture. His strength in his legs are normal. Five or six times, and so loves them, so you'll hear from me too. It radiates around the chest, pattern, and as the intern, you already know this is last 24 hours, she's developed a cluster of vesicles, burning, and these other pictures to the right. So what's the diagnosis for this? It's shingles. And one of the most important things about shingles is that diagnosis of that requires removing a shirt sometimes on physical exam, which is a major barrier to diagnosis. A lot anymore, but it is a condition that does pop up. It also, believe it or not, is a condition that can be treated very well by vaccines. And if you heard Dr. Blackburn talk about the awareness and vaccination is important. But also, if you have herpes zoster ophthalmicus, you've got an increased risk of stroke from that. Next is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. The progressive degenerative muscle wasting process, there are sensory and cognitive changes. It affects men more than women, age group 40 to 60. The clinical manifestations of that are weakness, fasciculation. Very important piece here. Even though weakness, elasticity, doctor reflex here will be there. I've shared a lot. You go back and look. But individuals are going to have elevated CKs. They're going to talk about body twitching sporadically, and that's pretty pathognomonic for this. They're going to have difficulty long-term with breathing as the disease advances, difficulty clearing the airway, dissipation, aspiration risk, loss of control, and of course, intellect is usually very difficult disease. One of the fair questions for this is how do you diagnose this? Is diagnosed with EMG. Death is the result of pneumonia, respiratory failure. People can ask the question here. People, this is one thing that people have their mental alertness to be able to plan. That's important. There is a drug. Which can be used for treatment of this disease. It does not cure it, it only slows it down, and it's usually just a few months. And that's a very difficult discussion. Do you know, for those of you that have these patients, it's the cost of this medication versus quality of life extended. Then we talk about supportive nutrition, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that at lunchtime today around the ethics. And then, usually, respiratory compromise. within 2 to 5 years of diagnosis.